Welcome back, Tucson, Arizona, to the second hour of The Morning Voice, Tucson's newest, greatest show over here, bringing you all kinds of local news and talk every Monday through Friday, 7 to 9 a.m. On Mondays, Lydia Aranda is going to host for us, Ted Maxwell on Tuesdays. You got me, Grant Kruger, here on Wednesdays. I'm the owner of Union Public House, Reforma, Modern Mexican, Mezcal and Tequila, Proof Artisanal Pizza and Pasta, and the Maverick King of Clubs. A big mouthful right there.
Stocking up on Coors Banquet.
Absolutely. As rodeo comes up this week, we are super excited for that opportunity. Going to be a real banger of a week for the Maverick. Tomorrow, we've got Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance and Dr. Ed Ackerley bringing us all kinds of cool things from the University of Arizona. Now, as we lead up to Valentine's Day over here, right, as today is February 12th, I've got to remind all our listeners over here that dry January is absolutely over. And we couldn't be happier about that in the restaurant business in some capacity. As you can imagine, dry January can be a bit of a financial setback.
Really?
It's hard to attribute it just to dry January.
No, but at the macro level, if it's down, you know it.
We do. Particularly, of course, the first few weeks of January are always tough.
Sure.
The New Year's resolutions, I'm going to the gym forever. I'm going to change my life. I'm never going to eat a carbohydrate again. You know, dry January, you know, all these things. But normally, as we've said before on this show, right around Martin Luther King Day, people's debauchery comes back. And they make their way back to the myriad of great, great establishments that we've got here in the Old Pueblo. I've been blessed to spend this last year and some change on Jump In Tucson and talk about all things local restaurants and hospitality. And I'm going to still take that opportunity here on The Morning Voice to also try to have at least a few segments with the exciting changes that are happening in our hospitality scene. But I certainly love the idea of also being able to bring you local news, talk, events, politics. You know I've got opinions, and I am happy to share them with you here on The Morning Voice. Lots of local restaurant news popping up this week. More openings than closings, which is not shocking for the course in the month of February, post-dry January. I myself had maybe a damp January at best. I tried to do my part. Yes, absolutely. Matt is bringing the weather over here. The forecast, however, for this next quarter is looking like monsoon levels over here. So we're a bit concerned about that. But lots of new openings and moves happening as well, too. First and foremost, Barrow's Pizza in Marana, moving right across the street to the former Boston's location on Arizona Pavilions Boulevard. You're going to see a lot of second and third generation restaurants popping up like this in these larger spaces. You know, there's something to be said about trying to manage an 8, 10, 12,000 square foot restaurant location. These are essentially dinosaurs. Nobody are building restaurants anymore of this size. Ever since Proposition 206 passed in 2016, it's sort of skyrocketed our server wage. And you've probably heard me talk about this before in some capacity. And this isn't sour grapes by any means. I want all of our servers to absolutely crush it and make all the money they can make out there. But server wage since 2005 has essentially gone up nearly sixfold. And prices haven't. So not shockingly, these 8, 10, 12,000 square foot spaces like this Boston's or like the recently closed Champs location, that's Champs with two P's, formerly also known as Craft Republic. And for those of us old enough to remember, it was also Fox and Hound as well too, located next to the Foothills Mall site. A nearly 12,000 square foot location announced they were closing earlier this month. And that building is now sitting vacant. Again, these big dinosaurs are tough to fill. There's something to be said about walking into a place that's small, say 50 people. Think Frida's on the east side, right? The cool little Mexican place that's gotten a lot of attention. And, you know, it's garnered long waits. Well, of course, because it's tiny. Right? 50 people there makes it feel packed. You put 50 people in the Champs with two P's and it is empty, right? 200 people don't fill that one up. It's the same thing sort of for us at the Maverick. It's why we don't open on Mondays and Tuesdays in the nightclub business, is that quite frankly, you need to really have a critical mass to give your establishment a lot of energy. And so I wish Barrow's a tremendous amount of success over there. They happen to be a chain, of course. They've got 48 locations throughout the United States. And so they've got the financial wherewithal to take on the risk of these larger spaces. Speaking of risks, there's a couple new restaurants popping up on the east side. Tanga Verde's had all kinds of action going on over there, and I, for one, am all for it. I am so excited to make Tanga Verde great again. I absolutely want to see more and more restaurants pop up in that area and give it the critical mass that it was once referred to as Restaurant Row. I might hypothesize now that Campbell Avenue has become the Restaurant Row of Tucson, but Tanga Verde can and should, and I hope will come back. Exciting news that Sace Kitchens, right? Jake Munoz has announced that they're going to open their fourth location. I guess it should just be named Cuatro, I suppose. It's going to be on the east side on the Plaza Shops there behind Sakura Restaurant. I've absolutely been a proponent for somebody buying Sakura and remodeling that one and making it great again, because that was the be-all, end-all sports bar in the 1990s in Tucson. When we talked about spring training at the top of the first hour over here, Sakura was the place you could go to and absolutely expect to bump into Albert Bell or Frank Thomas or any of these, you know, like major league stars who were hanging out and enjoying Tucson's nightlife in a pre-cell phone era, you know, as we might say. And so, like, I would love to see Sakura come back as a updated sports bar. I think they haven't been as relevant as I would like since probably the 90s. I think their audiovisual budget is still from the 90s over there. There might be picture tube TVs in Sakura. And that's not, again, being mean. I want this to be amazing and to be great and to create that walking, bar-hopping sort of thing going on over there. And so, speaking of that, the Saddlehorn Saloon, right, sold a few months ago to the owners of the Tucson's Cork, right? It used to be Jonathan's Tucson Cork. Now it's called The Cork. Those of us old enough, again, we remember it as Cork and Cleaver. There is no more Cleaver over there, but they have cleavered the Saddlehorn Saloon and turned it into a bar concept that just opened up this weekend called Uncorked, right? It's going to be a bit of a gastro pub. They had to redo quite a bit of kitchen over there. It's a pretty small location with a small kitchen. But Glenn was telling me that they really spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to get that old building up to code. And this has just opened up as Uncorked. So if you happen to have some time over there on the east side, Uncorked is ready to go. Sace Kitchen coming up, all within walking distance of Zio Pepe, right? And we've had Matt Cable here on the show over there. Jay Healy and the Cow Pony. We definitely need to get Jay on this show sometime. I don't know that he's up between 7 and 9 o'clock in the morning.
Would it be easier just to stay awake for a couple hours.
We might need to have the evening voice as opposed to the morning voice there, but I love the Cow Pony. Good friends over there, a symbiotic relationship, of course, with us and the Maverick on that side as well, too. Negotiations have been happening for the space located just sort of northeast of the Maverick, the former location of the Pawnbroker and Corleone's. This building has sat empty for a couple of decades now. Mm-hmm. An 8,000 square foot.
Had a brief reprisal right around 2005, maybe-ish. Your 2 decades is right on.
And at the end of the hour, we talked about Basil's and this old school sort of dark mafia feel to it. Like, this Corleone's / Pawnbroker building has that in spades.
80s,
like,
man.
Yeah, on
mirrors. You walk in there and you feel like you're in an 80s video.
Absolutely. Yep. And I would love somebody to make an investment and fix up that space over there as well, too. If we were to activate that, as opposed to the homeless encampment that currently has been activated in that particular space, it would be phenomenal.
If they do redo it, they can keep the 80s mirrors and everything, you know, because it's got vodka. You walk in there, it's got vodka tonic written all over it. It's just totally 80s. Okay, the only thing I ask is do a speed bump eradication plan. That place, that lot has so many speed bumps that I've never seen.
Without a doubt, there is no question that that is a challenging parking lot over there. And that parking challenges continue to be part of the problem we have with developmental services. I actually got to have a meeting with one of the assistant city managers at dinner just last week and brought up those concerns that at some point we've got to modernize our city's parking codes with respect to restaurants and bars. I won't bore our listeners with the minutiae of those codes, but let's just say we're overparked in the city of Tucson and that people don't interact with restaurants and bars in the same way that they used to. Rideshare, Uber, Lyft, and whatnot have changed the way we experience and imbibe in adult beverages, and it changes the way we travel to those establishments. And these parking codes are just as antiquated as the 10 and 12,000 square foot buildings that they hamper over here. Now, in the restaurant business, there's a hierarchy of top dogs, you know, of starting at the bottom, dishwasher, right? Busboy, hostess. I myself started as a dishwasher in Maria's Pizza in Detroit in the year 1990. I'm dating myself a little bit over here. And slowly but surely, over a number of years, I worked my way up to the absolute top spot in the pyramid in the compensation per hour department, and that is bartender. Believe it or not, bartenders make more than, certainly per hour, than they're often the restaurant managers. And in many cases, particularly in states like Arizona, they might even make more than the owners. I've been thinking about going back into bartending, you know, like dusting off the old apron and shaker over here. My wife, Katarina's got a few objections to that one, so I might stick around on the ownership management side. But we're going to, when we come back after the break, we're going to bring on Bill Netherton, right? Professional Bartenders Unlimited. He's going to tell us about his restaurant career, like the places he's worked. We've talked a lot of old school establishments, and he's been a bartender in a few of those in that top dog spot. We're going to talk about his business, happens to be a neighbor here of KVOI, located in Sodom's Bunker down here in the business park, right in the Palo Verde industrial area. We're going to bring on Bill Netherton from Professional Bartenders Unlimited, talking about all things being a bartender and professional bartender when we come back after the break. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Morning Voice on 10:30 a.m. Your home for local news. And welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. You know, there was a couple moments in my life when I think I really made it as a younger individual. The first one was moving to Tucson on my own and getting my own place and finally being able to afford the Kraft macaroni and cheese as opposed to the 3-for-1 Safeway brand. I know that seems silly, but like truly, that was a monumental moment in my life on my budget. And then the second one was moving up from server to become bartender. There couldn't be a position with more respect in the industry, right? A service industry that often doesn't get respect can have, you know, some difficult guests and some difficult customer service experiences. But bartender is the absolute top dog, the queen or king bee over here in some capacity. And live in the KVUI studios today, we are joined by a man who's employed more bartenders than just about anybody in the old Pueblo, the owner of Professional Bartenders Limited, Mr. Bill Netherton. Welcome, Bill.
Hey, good morning, Grant. Great to be here with you guys.
Hey, very excited to have you with us here in the Bustos Media Studio. You guys happen to be our neighbors located right next door.
Man, you walk out our front door and you look due west and there you are right there. So it's very convenient. Matter of fact, I parked at my building, grabbed something and walked right over.
We don't even need a Uber or rideshare in any capacity to commute between these establishments. Now, you're OG. You've started working in the restaurant business, I understand, in 1973?
1973. My first job was at Westford Lick Resort, bussing tables in the Gold Room.
Now, could you afford Kraft macaroni and cheese at that time, or were you also on the Safeway brand?
Yeah, my dad could. Yeah, for me.
Nice.
Yeah, that was a great gig, man. I was doing my chores around the house, collecting allowance, and I said, Dad, I need to make more money. So he took me to Westford Lick Resort. He knew the maitre d'. My father practiced law here in Tucson, and I don't know if he met the guy at a bar because my dad was somewhat of a drinking man or if he was a client, but nevertheless, that was my first start. And believe it or not, and this is a true story, I was a very, very shy young boy. So being in hospitality brought me out of my shell.
Without a doubt, this happens so much. It's one of the developmental things I love about the service industry are these steps of career path, this upward mobility where we can take a shy 16 or 17-year-old introverted busboy and turn him into a 22-year-old bartender that can start a conversation with anybody and look you in the eye and not break eye contact while he also makes you an awesome martini.
Exactly.
Remembers your girlfriend's name and what your favorite sports team is. Like, pretty cool stuff.
I mean, think about this. 1973, I was actually only 13, probably breaking some form of child labor law.
Wasn't the drinking age about 13 at that time in the mid-70s?
I was in eighth grade. For some of us, it was, yes. But that was a great gig. I mean, I was a dishwasher there and a pot washer for 5 years. I was there actually for 5 years, all the way until I graduated from Canyon DeLauro High School. So that's where I cut my teeth.
5 years in the dish pit, Bill?
Well, yeah, off and on. Pot wash. Remember the coat of arms? That's at Casa Adobe's Plaza. I was a pot washer there making $2.20 an hour, which was a lot of money back then. Westward Look, bussing tables, $1.25 an hour plus tips.
Nice. It's the tips that always make the restaurant industry worthwhile. And something that's been on the forefront of the news, not just in Tucson or not just in the state of Arizona, but nationally, as we look at these changes in minimum wage laws and we see this one-size-fits-all minimum wage being applied to an industry that doesn't quite frankly fit in that box, right? Like, how much of a bartender's income comes from tips?
Well, tremendous amount. I mean, when I was at Westward Look back in the 70s, I don't know what the year was, but I remember when the federal government came out with the thing saying, hey, we are now going to start taxing your tips. And we were like, wait a minute. If I walk by a table and the guy says, hey, Bill, you did a great job, here's an extra $5. They wanted me to claim that, which I thought was egregious and outrageous.
Well, back then everything was cash too. So, I mean, quite frankly, you're really talking an honor system. You know, at that point, and as the old saying goes, there's no honor amongst thieves.
That's right. I think that's why they had an 8% cap at the time. But I would walk into work and some of the lead waiters, this is back when fine dining and tableside dining carts were available, and some of the top waiters would approach me and a couple of my mates because they knew we were really good at what we did. We took great pride in it, and they would literally grease the palm with money to start your shift because they wanted me to work their station, knowing that we would make them a lot of money.
Oh, without a doubt. When I moved up to bartender, everybody was on the take, Bill. I mean, absolutely. The dishwashers, right? The bussers. I mean, they took out my trash. They moved my bar mats. They helped stock the bar. I didn't do any real work. I just like was the face of this operation. And I had a group of minions underneath me that were getting paid handsomely to do my actual dirty work for me.
When I went to work at new places, the first thing I would do as a bartender, being in the front of the house, I would go to the back of the house and I'd introduce myself to the cooks. Hey, you guys need a soda pop? You need this, that? Because these guys were cooking my food as well. So those are the first people that I branded with, and we had a great relationship right out of the gate.
I love it. Tipping the kitchen is something that can be illegal under current federal FLSA laws.
Really?
I happened to own a restaurant in Mexico for a better portion of a decade in San Carlos. And of course, we didn't have U.S. FLSA laws at that time. And we had a mandatory tip pool in Mexico to the kitchen. And it was amazing, Bill, because what would happen is it created this sense of unity, right? I could have, pretty attractive cocktail waitresses and bartenders, and then all the guys in the kitchen would come out and take their bus tubs and stock their bars and right. Reload all the beers and do all the bars' dirty work for, of course, a portion of the cut. And it was a very symbiotic relationship that created way, way more teamwork than we see in traditional restaurants here in the United States, where the dichotomy between the front and back of house is so divided.
Oh my gosh, yes, absolutely, 100%.
And large portions of this are due to these tip pooling laws that make it illegal in some, not all states, but many states that don't pay, this incredibly large minimum wage.
Right.
One of my goals is this year, actually, is to help change some of those federal laws. I'm going to Washington, D.C. on April 1st through the 4th, and great. We're going to lobby. I'm part of the Arizona Restaurant Association. And as we look at this no tax on tips, you brought up the tax that you were asked to pay on tips. Well, nowadays, of course, every server is, paid predominantly in credit cards. And so those tips are declared automatically in a 1099-K. Right. And as such, this no tax on tips, discussion isn't going to be an executive order. President Trump or, had Harris won as well, too, couldn't have changed those laws by themselves.
Correct.
They have to do it with Congress. And I'm excited, not for the no tax on tip part, but for the fine print.
Yeah. The devil's in the details, isn't it?
It always is, Bill. And I'm so excited for the opportunity to potentially modify some of these FLSA rules and allow some tipping for the back to really help out the crew that I believe has been part of the experience all along and hasn't been adequately rewarded.
I think it's important that we take a look at all these things that are on the table and in all industries to be more efficient as a government, as a people, as business owners. But getting back to something you said about the front of the house and the back of the house, there's been such a divide over the years. Do you think the concept of when people were putting in glass windows where you could actually see the kitchen staff and the open concept, we never saw that back in the 70s and early 80s, but now you get a chance to see who's cooking your food and who's back there. You're kind of on stage. In a sense.
You are. And I think you see this line blurring between front and back of house when you think of all the QSR type restaurants. Go to take a sauce, for example, Bill, where like the cashier that's taking your order could actually pour you a glass of wine, but also could be making your salad or tossing your pizza in some capacity. There's sushi chefs, right? Like, they're kind of part of the front of house experience. There's a lot of gray area now where, between front and back. And I think you're right, Bill, that this came from these open concept kitchens. Kitchens used to be, and often still are, particularly in these older dinosaur-type restaurants, right, completely enclosed. You wanted to separate the back of house. And there can be some reason for that. I mean, not every back of house, star back of house employee can be aesthetically pleasing as, say, your front of house bartenders.
I'm just a big fan of the back of the house people. In a lot of cases, are the unsung heroes. I mean, they're preparing your food, they're garnishing your plate, they're doing all these things with this great presentation. It's almost like a drummer in a band. They're kind of behind the scenes. They're a huge integral part of the group, and they might even be one of the lead singer, but since they're behind, nobody sees them. They don't get as much attention.
So how did you get out of the back of house? Like, how did you go from being 5 years, right, in the dish pit in a couple different places here, Westwood Look and Coat of Arms? How'd you move your way to the front?
So first of all, that was dishwashing and pot washing is the dirtiest job in the house. But no matter how great the chef is, if he doesn't have a clean plate or a pan to put it on, they can't do a thing. So it was a very important part. I took great pride in that position. I was at, I used to go to places and say, as a customer, I'd say, I wonder if I would like working here. I'd hang out, like TGI Fridays is the example. They had a great broccoli cheese soup. I'd sit at the bar, I'd observe the staff, take a look, the hardwood floors, the aluminum ceilings. It was this hustle and bustle, high energy atmosphere. And I thought, this is a place I think I would enjoy working. And I applied there, but they don't hire bartenders off the street. And you have to be a waiter to start. So, because they want you to learn the very extensive food menu, which back in the day on that tier level of categories, let's face it, there was no restaurant that had more options than TGI Fridays.
Yeah, you're talking like a 6-page menu or something over here.
So I started as a waiter on the floor. And then one day the general manager says, hey, Bill, I was looking at your application and you would put waiter/bartender. He says, what kind of a bartending experience do you actually have? And I said, well, Hugh Randall was his name at the time. Great guy, God rest his soul. I said, to be honest with you, Hugh, the only drinks I've ever made is for my friends at my apartment. I said, so I don't have any actual technical training. They put me behind the bar in training. And this is a great story because I'm training, I'm still working the floor. And he approached me one day. He says, Bill, he goes, you're not cutting the mustard. I'm gonna pull you from the bar and put you back on the floor. And I thought, oh my gosh, my bartending days are numbered right out of the gate. And so one of the other wait staff bartenders, Mark Daly, Tucson Firefighter, he said, Hugh, the problem with Netherton is that you're not putting him for training sessions enough behind the bar. So pull him off the floor, put him behind the bar, give me a few weeks to work with him. I'll bring him back up to where he needs to be in his training process. And as they say, the rest is history.
Without a doubt. And look at Mark Daly looking at you now, you know, owner of Professional Bartenders Unlimited over here, wasn't cut to run that bar, you know, at that particular time.
Unbelievable how our paths take us. I mean, I was so close to not doing that.
Yeah, it is unbelievable how that those paths take. But entrepreneurship is just like that, right? There's been many times in my life where I have, quote unquote, served my last drink and look at us now. Well, we're going to take a quick break over here. When we come back, we're going to talk more to Bill Netherton, owner of Professional Bartenders Unlimited, about all things with the sexiest position in the restaurant business, the bartender. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger and Bill Netherton on 10:30 a.m. The Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. We are joined live again for another segment in the KVOI studios with Mr. Hospitality, Bill Netherton from Professional Bartenders Unlimited. Welcome back, Bill.
What an honor to be here. Hey, I just want to say to the community, you listeners know this already, but I've been a big fan of this show and Grant himself personally for a long time. So I am so darn excited to be here today. I'm literally jumping out of my seat and I'm so honored to be here with you guys. And what a pleasure.
Well, thank you so much, Bill. We're excited for The Morning Voice, the opportunity to get to go a couple of hours now every single morning, Monday through Friday, and all kinds of great local topics pertinent to our listeners in Tucson is something that does not escape me. I am really excited to talk not just about the restaurant business, but even local news and politics. But given the fact that you are one of the premier, you know, catering, bartending services, if not the premier one in Tucson, let's go back to this talk about bartenders and restaurant work and you moving your way from the back of house to the front of house.
Yeah, it was a big transition back of the house. You know, when you at Fridays, it was the best example. When you walked into any TGI Fridays, Grant, back in the day, you're in the foyer, but through those double doors, you walked in and the whole dining area was on a certain level, but the bars at any Fridays were two or three steps up. So you were literally on stage. They wanted your personality to flow. You wore the suspenders, the buttons. They wanted your flair. They wanted everybody to have
15
individual
pieces of flair, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. There was a checklist there. But man, that's where I started. I was with Fridays for almost 7 years. It was literally like the old television program Cheers. I mean, it was like a neighborhood bar. But man, on the weekends, you needed to be physically, mentally, and emotionally prepared for that shift, because you're having 5, 6, 10 people deep at that bar, and you got to be moving. And if you're not sharp, you're going to be in the weeds, as they say.
Absolutely. This is why the cream rose to the top in the restaurant business, and why this is the tip of the pyramid, right? Bartending, you know, is ultimately the highest compensated job per hour in the restaurant business, and pretty much deservedly so as well, too.
You can earn according to your efforts. I mean, you give people great service, especially being a professional bartender, and people were literally throwing money at me back in the 80s. I made so much money. I wish I had some of that from back in those days, but when you're younger, you don't set it aside like you should. But there's no doubt about it. You earn according to the services that you provide.
So tell me about your thoughts on bartending school. I have my own opinions on that one, but given that you are professional Bartenders Unlimited, I'll let you go first.
So that's a great question. I have a lot of people over the years, like weekly people call me, ask us if we're hiring. And they say, hey, I just got my certificate from, at the time, Celebrity Bartending was in town. Carol and Robert Plotkin ran that for many years over here at Speedway and Campbell. But I say, listen, that's all fine and well having your certificate, but ultimately, there's only one way to ride a horse, and that's to get on the horse and ride it and be in the scene. So I always said, listen, find yourself a bar backing job somewhere. Observe the other bartenders, work with the other bartenders. Ultimately, as you're fully aware, there's going to be a position that opens up, because this is a transitional thing. A lot of people are doing it temporarily while they're going to school, but get the bar back job, observe, learn, and that's how you grow. That's how I learned. And then you step into that role, and then you carve out your own way with the tutelage of the people around you. And then you craft your own personal personality, which I did. I mean, I was horrible to begin with. And look where I'm at now. It's just amazing. Everybody can learn and grow every day.
Now, you are taking the words right out of my mouth over here, Bill, right? For our listeners, bartending school, as we know it, is not a necessarily respected career path to upward mobility in the restaurant business, right? I would much prefer to promote a bar back that knows their way around this bar and knows how to stock everything and knows how to just instantly reach down with his left hand and grab a bottle of Captain Morgan's and make you that drink without ever breaking eye contact with you. That sort of muscle memory that only comes from experience in working in that particular bar. That soft touch of the shoulder of the bartender next to you to let them know that you're behind, and how not to bang your left hip on the speed
rack
that's in front of the well. And those sort of things only come from working in the establishment.
There's bar lingo that we all use. I mean, we had a hot coffee drink. You know, we'd say hot stuff coming through. There's so many things that you do that are subtlety, but they're automatic. And the bartender can't perform his duties at the highest level without a great bar back. Keeping your garnishes stocked, keeping your glassware clean, keeping the bar top wiped down. There's so many components that go into just the serving of one actual beverage to a customer that makes all this become a great experience.
Correct. And understanding that mise en place, they would say, you know, your setup, both, and this applies to both the kitchen, right? The make tables where the chefs work, and it applies to the drinks as well, too. A lot of people think of bartenders as like an alchemist, that you have this knowledge of 500 individual cocktails. And certainly back in the day, particularly in the pre-internet world, I think there was a little bit more memorization of these things. But the truth is, we're not making you 500 different cocktails every night. We're making you the same 40 drinks over and over again, consistently and with speed.
Yeah.
And those are the skill sets beyond, of course, all the other soft skills that a bartender really needs.
Yeah, exactly. You know, today there's so many different types of craft cocktails, but when it comes down to it, you have your staples, your Manhattans, your old fashions. You know, I love vodka personally, but it's the most universal alcohol that there is on the market, because you can make so many different drinks with just that liquor alone. Vodka tonic, club soda, any of the juice drinks. So the list goes on and on.
So what year did you open up Professional Bartenders Unlimited over here?
1984 was the official start year.
Wow. So we're talking 41 years ago. That was the last Tigers World Series win for those Detroit fans over here.
So this is the beginning of our 41st year in business. It's shocking and mind-boggling for those words to even roll off my lips, Grant. I was 24 years young when I started the company. And now listen, I was working 2 and 3 other part-time jobs. Arizona Inn, 9 years, TGI Fridays, the Holiday Inn Holodome. I was working all 3 of those gigs at the same time while I was going to Pima Community College night classes, which were being held at Rincon High School because my dad's law office was at Swan and Fifth. So I would walk over to Rincon campus for a Pima Community College course. So I had a lot of stuff going on, lots of irons in the fires while I was starting Professional Bartenders Unlimited.
Unbelievable. But it's that sort of work ethic, right, that made you successful both on those levels of the restaurant business and on the entrepreneurship side as well, too.
Yeah, 100%. Thankfully, my parents instilled a great work ethic in me from early on. And I've never been afraid to work. I don't really care about titles as much as I do performance and leading by example. And that's how I've built Professional Bartenders Unlimited. I love serving this community. This is my hometown. I'm a second generation Tucson native. I couldn't be more proud to be serving this community and growing with the community. So many people have put their faith and trust in us. And it's such an honor to continue to climb and especially climb out out of some very, very difficult times.
So you and your teammates, you know, host and bartend in some of the most prestigious events in Tucson. Give our listeners a breakdown of the kind of events that you do.
You know, we just did the VIP tent for the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl. And that, let me tell you, that VIP tent is very busy. So that was another feather in our cap. Back in the day, we did the old Ping Welch's golf tournament. You know, we do so many events in the community. We do a lot of nonprofit events for local organizations here. We do a ton of private parties in people's homes, obviously. You can go to the traditional resorts and whatnot, but to have a backyard wedding and you work with some of the top leading event planners in the city, these are high-end gatherings that just are not being held at the hotels and resorts. And nothing against those folks, but some people like to mix it up. Some people can't afford to go that route either. So
sometimes it's nice just to have some character, too, in a different setting than a hotel banquet room, which by its nature is a little bit soulless.
Yeah, there was a place called Rancho de los Cerros. It was owned by David Hoffman, God rest his soul. He used to own Little Abner Steakhouse. I believe Molly, his wife, still owns it. But this ranch way up north of Tucson was an amazing property. I mean, we did a thing out there 1 year where the Beach Boys performed, events for American Express, Ford Motor Company. The corporate list goes on and on of all these venues. They would put on a private rodeo in the arena.
So. Amazing, Bill. So many awesome events here. Professional Bartenders Unlimited. Bill Netherton, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of Bill's favorite local restaurants as well, too. A titan of the restaurant and bar industry, Mr. Bill Netherton on 10:30 a.m., your morning voice. We're having time for one more round over here on the Morning Voice. This is Grant Kruger, your host. We're live in the KVOI studios with Mr. Bill Netherton, Mr. Hospitality from Professional Bartenders Unlimited. At the break, Bill was telling me about the slogan for Professional Bartenders Unlimited, be a guest at your own party.
What a concept. I mean, doesn't it say it all? We've all tried to be a great host or hostess, and we do all this hard work and planning, and the next thing you know, the party's over, and you thought, oh my God, I talked to everybody for about 18 seconds each, and I've got to clean up this mess. I really didn't have any fun. But if you hire Professional Bartenders Unlimited or go to probartenders.net, you too can be a guest at your own party and let us do all the work for you on your behalf so you can be a guest at your own party.
Which is a pretty amazing thing to be able to do. I think people really underestimate the skill set that's necessary to serve dozens or in many cases hundreds and hundreds of guests. I mean, it doesn't just start with basic advice like, hey, bring more ice, but it's the equipment, it's the mixers, it's the skill set of all these things, no?
Grant, we are a full-service beverage caterer. I have a 3,000-square-foot building 100 yards from this studio, and we do everything in-house. We have our own ice machine. We bag our own ice. We bring everything to the event, the liquor, the beer, the wine, the mixers, the ice, the cups. Our clients literally do not lift a finger except to write us a check, and normally they write us that check with gratitude because we're there to make their life easy and they can be a guest at their own party and they can shine and everybody has this wonderful experience and we just do everything from A to Z.
That's fantastic. As somebody that buys a lot of liquor and pays a lot of servers, like what kind of cost basis would this be for a listener to have right. their own event catered?
That's
by
a
you?
Great question. We can all go out to a bar or hotel or resort and let's face it, it's not cheap these days. You're paying anywhere from $6 to $15 for a glass of wine, a craft cocktail. With Professional Bartenders Unlimited, you could have a party and have a price point of maybe $20 per person, which would include, Grant, 4 drinks per person. Do the math. That's $5 for a glass of wine, a margarita, a beer, a martini. You can't touch those prices.
$5 a drink? That's pretty amazing. I mean, that's basically lower than most places' happy hour prices at this point, Bill.
And by the way, that includes the bartenders and the labor as well.
That's fantastic. I mean, what a bargain. And is there like a cap? Like, what's the biggest event that you guys could do?
Well, we did homecoming years ago at U of A. The beer garden was 10,000 people. So that particular homecoming, I think we had 70 bartenders on site working all the various tents and corporate hospitality areas. But we also have a number 10 beer and wine store license, which enables us to purchase directly from our local distributors, wineries, and breweries. And we get wholesale pricing, and we do not mark any of that up. That's part of our marketing plan. We pass those discounts directly to our customers. So $20 per person, 4 drinks per person, $5 per drink.
So let's say I've got some well-heeled guests that have a palate for more expensive liquors. I get that there's a lower price, but can I get the good stuff?
Absolutely. Most of our clients all have personal requests. We have a general list, and then we can upgrade that, no problem. We have bourbon aficionados, tequila people, vodka, so we can specialize and custom write any beverage menu whatsoever. You know, on the website, probartenders.net, there's our packages. They're very detailed and broken down. It's a great way to get pricing. If you're looking for pricing, it's all right there in black and white.
That's fantastic. Are there other social media platforms that guests can find you at?
Oh, yeah. We're on Facebook. You know, we're going to be doing the bridal fair actually a week from this Sunday on the 23rd at the Convention Center. Professional bartenders will have a booth there. Stop by and say hello. We'll be there from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m.
That's fantastic. Are there other places we can lease you? Where's our phone number? Like,
phone number.
Shameless self-promotion over here in our last couple minutes.
520-721-1577.
And that's Bill Netherton, Professional Bartenders Unlimited over here. It's fantastic. A great opportunity to do work with somebody that's been in the game since 1973, which is pretty impressive, right? We've had a lot of impressive guests over here with 10 and 20 and 30 years worth of service industry experience. We're talking a guy that's run his own business for 41 years at this point and has another couple decades behind it. You don't even look that old, Bill.
I don't feel that old. I'm great. I'm looking at me.
What's the secret to your youth and success here?
I got to tell you, I am more excited today than I've ever been, which is amazing. Most people get burned out. Honestly, I'm more invigorated and excited today because serving this community of Tucson and doing what we do on so many venues and events, it never gets boring. Every day is a new day. I told my team, I want every day to be like Las Vegas. It's grand opening. The floors are shiny. There's not one thumbprint on the window. And every day is a new day. And let's treat all of our customers like it's grand opening because you know what? Our customers deserve the best, and we have the best for you.
I love it. Thanks, Mr. Netherton. I look forward to being a guest at my own party, and listeners can do that one as well, too, with Professional Bartenders Unlimited. It has been an absolute pleasure to have you on our show here this morning, Bill, and a pleasure to spend the Wednesday morning with you listeners as well, too. It's great to have 2 hours to talk to you about all things local news, politics, sports, entertainment, and, of course, the restaurant business. I want to end our show today with a quote from the famous Anthony Bourdain, certainly a well-known individual in the service industry. And he said, "You can always tell when a person has worked in a restaurant. There's an empathy that can only be cultivated by those who've stood between a hungry mouth and a $28 pork chop. A special understanding of the way motley misfits can become a family. Service industry work develops the soft skills that recruiters talk about on LinkedIn. Discipline, promptness, the ability to absorb criticism, and most importantly, how to read people like a book. The work is thankless, fun, and messy, and the world would be a kinder place if more people tried it. With all due respect to my former professors, I've long believed I've gained more knowledge in kitchen, bars, and dining rooms than any college could even hold. Thank you for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us on 10:30 a.m. The Voice. This has been your Morning Voice with Grant Kruger. Enjoy your day.